All right, welcome to All the Horrible Things with Christopher and Enan J. How you doing today, sir?
Doing all right. The weather, I've got the window open, and it feels amazing. We're going into the fall season, spooky season, if you will. It's pretty good.
It's glorious. I know this is like your time of year.
Yeah.
What film are you looking forward to the most, and what pumpkin patch do you frequent?
You know, I haven't been to a pumpkin patch in a while. The last time I was at a pumpkin patch was in Michigan. They've got great pumpkin patches, but we used to have one growing up not far from our house called Sunny Acres.
On North Avenue, right?
Yeah, North Avenue.
Yes, I was there a couple years ago.
Yep.
They got all sorts of like cartoon stand-ups. What do you call those? Standees.
Yeah.
Everywhere. It's a fun place.
Yeah.
They got a nice little shop there with all the delicious flavored honeys. And the pumpkins are only, you know, wildly expensive, not
right.
Insanely expensive.
That was so. One of my first jobs was working at a lemonade stand there.
Really? You worked there?
Yeah.
Well, now it's all coming together.
Yeah.
You're... Your love of all things fall.
Oh yeah.
Are you a pumpkin spice man?
Yes. I mean, not like in like beverages necessarily, but I do like the pumpkin flavor quite a lot.
In what then, if not beverages?
Well, you know, like pumpkin bread. There's pumpkin. You can basically put pumpkin to anything. It's good. I wasn't saying like I'm not like the Starbucks pumpkin drink guy,
you know. I can do one a year. Give me one of those a year, and it hits the spot.
Yeah,
but I can't do too much of it. I know we tried those pumpkin spice Cheerios last year.
Oh, interesting.
Same thing. You have a bowl, fun, but then you're just throwing out the rest, and it's a waste.
One of the better pumpkin cereals is Special K makes a pumpkin.
Oh,
Special K. That's really good. But I also like
Special K, man.
Pumpkin beers, you know, fall beers, October.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All that
I can
stuff.
Do a couple of those for sure. But again, yeah. it's one of those flavors that I like a little, but I can't overdo it.
And dose.
And I'm glad it's only around once a year.
I am too. Otherwise, yeah, it would probably be too much. Like, I would grow to hate it if it was around all the time.
And by once a year, I mean 5 months out of the year, it seems to
right.
come out earlier and earlier.
It's half the what? Year.
There's no pumpkins in the horror that we're talking about today. Why don't we just let everybody know what we're talking about here?
Yes, we are talking about The Last Voyage of the Demeter, which is, you know, relatively new to On Demand, I think.
Came out the 29th, so only a week ago.
Andre Overdahl.
29th of August. Say that again? I missed that.
Andre Overdahl, the director... I like him. He's kind of hit or miss.
Yeah.
But, like, I loved Troll Hunter. I enjoy the...
Troll Hunter is awesome.
Yes.
He gets all the credit in the world for Troll Hunter. That knocked my socks off. But he's got this one that if you go on, like, all the horror subreddits, people absolutely adore. And it makes me think maybe I gotta revisit it. But it's this one called the Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Yes, yes.
And I remember really not liking it, but I guess it is like this crown gem for people.
I think you should revisit it. I think it's, you know, within the it's interesting because it's kind of like a subgenre of like the possession genre. It is well acted. It is creepy. I by no means dislike it. I enjoy that movie.
Okay. I mean, Brian Cox, you can't go wrong with. Who's the lead in that one? Emile Hirsch. Okay. Might have been him. He's a hit or miss guy for me, too. But I love Brian Cox, and I do remember he was dropping his authoritative ways, as he does in that one. And you can't go wrong with that. But I'm going to give him more credit for Troll Hunter. That being said, in terms of his direction on this one, no complaints. Although, I'm not sure you know much about the production hell of this film.
I don't. I could imagine when you're basically putting actors around water for 24/7, it's going
to
be...
Yeah. Well, it all goes back to a model shop in Hollywood where 2 decades ago, where one of the guys that worked there, who ends up getting the story credit in this, met one of the guys who worked on the 1992 version of Dracula with Gary Oldman. And that's where it all kind of comes from, that moment. But then we're talking 2 decades later, it's gone through multiple different directors that have been attached. Most significantly, I guess you could say David Slade's a good director. I wouldn't have mind seeing his take on it. He most recently did like the Black Mirror Bandersnatch. Okay. Then you got Stefan Rozowitzki, who not too familiar with, but he did win Best Foreign Picture back in 2007. So you know he's doing something right. But the one that I'm disappointed who was attached and then we lost him is no stranger to the vampire game, and that's Interview with the Vampire's Neil Marshall.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I do love Neil Marshall.
Right? Neil Marshall would have been great. And then the people that we have casting-wise that we lost, and I think this is one of the biggest issues with this film, was it didn't have a hard-hitting, even, you know, B-list or A-list, or it needed a name, especially when people weren't made aware up front that this is Dracula, you know?
Yeah.
I think the name is literally uttered once in the whole film. But we could have had Noomi Rapace.
Oh, wow. As the Emma character?
She was going to take Aisling's character, who's Anna in the film.
Yeah.
Which would have been awesome because she could do no wrong in my books. Yeah, Jude Law was supposed to be Clemens. Which would have made for a very different movie because then all of the racial stuff is gone, right? Which I thought was actually one of the better angles that it approached and kind of gave it more of the elevatedness.
And I thought Corey Hawkins, who played Clemens, did a great job. And
oh, he's great. Yeah.
I thought he was a great leading man up there with, oops, lost his light, with Liam Cunningham. And I don't think that would have been, you know, I like Jude Law, but I don't think that would have worked for this movie.
As connoisseurs as we are, I think we can appreciate these two who are amazing actors, right?
Yes.
But I don't think they got that same sort of recognition. Of course, Davos from Game of Thrones, everybody's going to know Cunningham from. But he does a lot of voice work. I just don't think... I loved what he did, but Ben Kingsley was initially attached to that role.
Oh, wow. That would have been pretty good.
I know. So, I mean, you lost Jude Law at one point over the past 2 decades, and then Viggo Mortensen was supposed to go in there.
For Captain Elliot?
Yes. No, not Captain Elliot. He was going to be Clemens's part again.
Oh, okay.
But you're right. I do like this guy, and I hope that it gives him a little bit of you know, propulsion, but the movie did horrible.
Yeah,
didn't make any money.
It did not.
It's a flop in terms of the finances and the box office.
Yeah. I think
I want to talk about why that might be with you.
Well, I personally think it's marketing. I think they did not do the greatest job. I don't remember seeing any really good campaigns. I think this movie probably would have been better if it was released later in the year, closer to Halloween, and I think people would have then realized, oh, this is like a monster movie, because when you show a movie trailer like this, you can only show so much, because this movie's relying on the mysterious side of things where you cannot show too much, and they do a good job of not showing too much until later into the movie.
They do.
So you really couldn't put this into the trailer, and then what do you have? You just have it's not a swashbuckler movie, but you've got like almost like a pirate sailor story. So I think people were confused as to what it was. And I mean, I'm a big Dracula fan. I love the lore. I know what the Demeter is when people say it. And I just don't think people were educated.
I think, yes, you're absolutely right. I think a lot has to do with the title. I don't think it's a title that sells at all, personally, because unless you are a fan of the novel Dracula by Bram Stoker and know that it's actually a portion of the novel, it's going to be lost in you, and you're absolutely right. You're not going to really understand what you're getting into, especially when I don't think the trailer mentions that we're dealing with Dracula here.
Right.
And that's a huge mistake. I know, I agree with you that they didn't need to really show much of the creature, which I can't wait to talk about, because that was one of the highlights of the film. But you got to give them more of a sense that we're dealing with vampire fair here. Absolutely. In a way that wasn't clear. I remember, like, one of the promo images is just the Demeter, the name on the side of the boat. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's not selling anybody.
No, I think they were, and this is kind of sad. You should be able to put that out there, and our culture, like, I just don't think they're educated to know what that was. And that's probably sad,
right?
Where you'd like to be able to just put out one word. It could have just been called Demeter, and like
Demeter would have been better. Yes, I think that would have been better. And of course, for those who don't know, Demeter, not only the ship name, but it works because Demeter was the Greek goddess of the harvest. And of course, Dracula is harvesting out a blood throughout the film. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think when you're dealing with a period piece, especially period piece horror, which is pretty niche, that isn't explicitly in Dracula,
right?
You're gonna struggle, because I can't off the top of my head think of any that have really hit that are period piece, like as bloody a horror as this is. I mean, Ghost period piece, okay, that sort of stuff usually can work.
Gothic, you can lean into it being more gothic, and the you're limited to this as well. You just have the Demeter. There's no flashback scenes necessarily, so we're not really leaning into other genre material here.
Right. And you're absolutely right. It was specifically made to mimic Alien, which I think it actually does a pretty good job of. I liked the way that we don't see it. When we do, it's pretty awesome, horrific moments when we actually do get this Dracula. It's kind of like a Jaws meets Aliens sort of thing, because, yeah, you know, you're stuck at the sea and he only pops up when he's going to murder somebody. But yeah, here's what I've been thinking about. I actually looked up if this is a thing, but this is very explicitly a boy movie. And we don't usually talk about, like, gendered stuff in our horror films, but to me it feels definitely like it's not knowing the audience it should be going for.
Right.
Because there's articles, I read an article on CNN about how girls like vampires more than guys do. And I mean, we're exceptions because we're just such horror fans. But if we're talking about your average moviegoers, girls, I think, are more interested in vampire horror because they're affiliated with, like, this seductive, romantic nature, and they're usually
Twilight.
Really beautiful until they're monstrous. But here we have a Dracula that is only ugly all the time.
Yeah.
He doesn't get pretty the more he drinks and gets healthy. He's amazingly monstrous, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I don't see this having appeal for the audience that mostly would want to see vampire films outside of big horror nuts like us.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think something I think Hollywood does too often in films is cast attractive leads to at least lure in an audience who's just
right.
There. And this movie, bless them for not. You know, they were really going for rough characters.
Right.
Even Anna is, I recognized her from Game of Thrones. She plays Lyanna Stark. I wouldn't say anybody in this movie, except for maybe Corey Hawkins, is like a
dreamboat.
Yeah.
Pun intended.
No, I
agree. And yes, he's a very handsome fellow, but I don't know if he's in the zeitgeist enough yet.
Sure.
To have that additional pull. Like, you got that Jude Law, you got that Viggo.
Right.
You're pulling it.
I'm suggesting here is that casting, which, you know, had its, you know, I don't want to say issues, because I think the cast worked out for this movie, but yeah, they weren't well-known names and they weren't going for heartthrobs. So,
right.
I think
we love that, but in marketing terms, I think that's a problem. And I think it might have helped if they put it out after The Color Purple with Corey, which Corey Hawkins will be in. The Color Purple is obviously going to crush it.
Oh, yeah.
And then everyone's going to be more familiar with him. And if you drop it after that, granted, that's coming out Christmas. And then this Demeter, I think, was supposed to come out much earlier in the year. And February is when it was supposed to come out.
That would have been a good month.
Because it wrapped up at the end of 2021, the filming. And to come out now, I get it, because we're entering the fall. But, I mean, it didn't come out now. It came out a month or so ago, right?
Right.
At least 5 weeks ago before it went on the digital.
And this movie would have done much better with, like, leaning into a claustrophobic month, like winter. You know, you're stuck inside. It would have brought another level of, or just a connection, you know? Like, I think this movie will go on to do a little bit better on demand. And I think, I think it's got to be word of mouth. It's got to be, like, because what we were talking about before we started recording is, like, this didn't do well, wasn't well received either. The box office numbers weren't great, but the reviews I had read of it made me not want to see it in the theater, which I shouldn't do this, because I shouldn't trust critics out there. I was telling you about another story about some of them are getting paid to give positive reviews now. And I think I should have gone with my gut, because I enjoyed this movie. I thought it was really fun. And I did myself a disservice by watching it on a much smaller screen. And this was kind of like an epic, you know, at sea movie.
I completely agree with you. When you're given the opportunity to pause something, you're taking away the power that it might have otherwise had, I feel like. And the running time, I do think, was a problem. And maybe it wouldn't have been as noticeable had I been in the theater and sucked in more. But I do think 2 hours for this one was too long, and there were some side plots that didn't really need to be there.
Yeah. I almost think... here's a question. Do you think this movie got into the ocean too soon?
I 100% think that, and I also think it got out of the ocean too late.
Yeah.
Because one of my favorite parts of it is the denouement, where we do have our one survivor having a run-in with Dracula, who survives at a bar, and it is creepy as hell, because this is Corey Hawkins' character. He gets sliced in the neck by Dracula at one point, and then when Dracula finds him at a bar, he just walks by him and kind of brushes the neck before he disappears, and it was just a magical, creepy moment.
Yeah.
That it was. I then was frustrated when then his character goes out there and he's like, I'm going to jack him down. That's going to be my life's goal now. I'm going to get that Dracula. I'm going to get him.
I thought there was, it was a fun scene, because I thought there was two really good callbacks, the scratch on the neck, and I was waiting for this cane to come back. They find his cane in the dirt coffin, and, you know, I thought that was such a nice little subtle thing, because now we're as an audience, we're being told, you know, like, he's just not at his fullest strength yet. He's not able to be his human form. So that's why he needs to feed on all these individuals. And I was waiting for the cane to appear again.
Here's the thing, though, is I felt like he still looked like the same Dracula that we saw on the boat, even though he was wearing the trench coat and the top hat. And just because of the time period, I think he could legitimately walk around, because, you know, plague, leprosy were things back then. And, you know, he's just a sickly old gross looking guy.
That's a great
point. But the fact that they went back to the OG Nosferatu look, right?
Yes.
Only other place I can think of seeing this is Midnight Mass. Those vampires looked very similar and had the same wings that this one did, which I love, you know, because it's I like that it can't turn into a bat, that it just has, you know, the webbed arm to be able to fly, you know?
Yeah.
I don't like it when Dracula can actually metamorphosize like that, because then that gets a little too ridiculous. I prefer this more realistic, monstrous version.
I agree. It gets a little bit too romantic when he becomes your Count Dracula, right? So...
Yes, but that does have more appeal for the larger audiences. And I just wanted to mention, yes, Midnight Mass has the look, but have you seen the Dracula miniseries that came out a few years ago? Because the middle episode is this, but with a Dracula that can look like a human.
Yeah.
He's trying played to by Kleiss Bang, who is awesome. Bang, I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Well,
he's awesome.
He was awesome.
Yes. Perfect look for a Dracula. But what I felt like that might have done better is give it more of a thing aspect where you don't know who is doing the horrific things.
Yeah, yeah.
Add that element of like dramatic irony for us, the suspense that's going on between, you know, the paranoia that I didn't feel like there was no paranoia. This was just straight alien-esque fear,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is fine. But I feel like that episode was probably the best of all the Dracula miniseries episodes.
It was.
And kind of like what this one was missing, that one had, and vice versa, right? So yeah. If you like this at all, I would definitely suggest going back to that Dracula miniseries for people, because it hit it out of the park. The first episode's just okay if you can get through that one. The latter ones are really badass.
Yeah. Oh, what I thought this movie did well was, and I don't know if it will go anywhere, because I thought this would have been a really great entry into a Universal horror universe, you know, into like a new monster universe. This would have been the perfect movie to launch into that. And Clemens' character is almost like taking on this Van Helsing role, which
yeah.
I thought was kind of just like a kind of a hat nod. Also, side note, Robert Eggers, the director, is doing a Nosferatu movie.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I do remember hearing about
it. We will have...
Yeah, that should be good.
Yeah, we will have more of this. And maybe if that's successfully done, this will sort of get some, like, more love. But...
Is he doing it within, what is it, Universal that owns the MonsterVerse? Because this was Universal, so that's how they were able to use the Dracula name.
Yeah, I think that's how they were able to use the name and the likeness. But going back to the monster, the actor playing this Dracula creature, Javier Botet, I think is his name, is
yeah.
in everything. Every horror project. Like, he's the crooked man in The Conjuring 2. He's in the It movies as, you know, like the big creature that comes out of the painting, I think. He is in so many things. And I had no idea that, until I looked at the credits after the movie, that it was him. Because at times I was looking at this creature thinking, it's kind of CG. And then there are moments where he's like lurking and he's preying on somebody, which were more terrifying.
Yeah.
I thought it was him, and he is contort his body, which I thought was brilliant. And in fact, I'm looking it up. He played a xenomorph in Alien Covenant.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, if not.
So he's kind of like the Andy Serkis of horror.
Yeah, he is.
I personally was never distracted. I didn't feel like it was CGI to me. I thought it was like one of the best vampires I've ever seen on screen. And I want to talk about these kills, because even this first kill with the, of course, that's one of the things that kind of bothered me, was kind of the play by number of who dies. You got all the animal livestock dies and all the rats die. And then you got your dick racist character who dies first. But the way he died was amazing, because when you saw Dracula, who was like, I don't know why he's so weak at that point, if he had been feeding on Anna, but he's like crawling around on the ground, and then he does this like mega leap like Wolverine and slices the guy's throat.
Yeah.
Before really creepily just crawling up his body and grabbing his head with a hand that was the size of his head.
Right.
Grabbing that head while he's draining him. I thought that was really effective.
It was.
I couldn't complain. That's kind of what really kept me in it and immersed, because I think at times it was a little slow.
But you almost wish that the ship was bigger and the crew was larger, so there was more to prey on, you know? I think that was my only, like, real complaint about the deaths, is that there weren't more of them.
I know. But the ones that were there were really effective. The subsequent one that I love then is the head smash was so gross.
Yeah.
That was one of the most horrific things. I mean, it reminded me of, what is it, Irreversible's fire hydrant to the head scene, because it was just so graphic. And it was creepy. In that sequence, right, you have Olgren, who I really like this actor, too. I think he was in Better Call Saul as well. I like this guy. I kind of wish he had lasted longer. He's the one that ultimately, I guess he gets bitten and strung up in the sails. I don't understand why he wasn't finished off, or, I mean, I guess plot-wise, I get it, because then
Olgarin
we see him coming after Toby.
We see him coming after Toby. We see that his eyes have glossed over. And for a while there in this movie, I didn't know if we were going to see people turn, you know, like he's purely feeding and he's not there to make any followers. But yeah, he's basically the first guy who's like, I saw something, there's something on the ship, right? That's the same character?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he establishes this whole communication via knocking on the ship.
Yes.
To get someone coming, which I actually really liked, because then the way that it worked, when the one guy's head does get smashed into, it's like Dracula's communicating here. This is what he's saying. He's knocking with, you know, a skull. And then of course Toby, when he's being cornered by the then shifting Olgrin, he gets almost saved by knocking furiously and getting everyone down there. But my question is, like, when he was fully turned, does this Dracula turn them into more like zombie like creatures? Like, he seemed unthinking.
I think puppet is more of an accurate term. I think because we established that he can get in their heads, I think he can control them to do what he wants. Because Anna said,
I like that.
Yeah. And that's why Olgrin was basically using his head to bash through the door. It's because he was just this, he was just a tool. He was just an instrument for Dracula to just bludgeon, like I don't care what you use, just get through this door. And he pushes his head all the way through. And then he can't get, it's just kind of like, there's a moment where I'm like, why are they doing this? So Olgrin gets almost to the latch. He's almost able to open the latch. And now there's a hole in the door. And then everyone else is trying to save Toby, the little boy. No one thinks to put their hand through this hole and just pull the latch open.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some frustrating moments like that. But that being said, I'm glad they didn't, because we got a child death. And I don't want to sound like a psycho, but my goodness, those are the most effective deaths in horror.
Children and dollies.
Oh, we should mention this. Okay, in the last cast, we talked about Cobweb and the Boogeyman. And we have an actor from each of those films in this. It's the kid from Cobweb, right? And then we have our Chicago boy. What's his name again?
Why can't I ever think of his name? David Desmalchian.
Desmalchian, who went to DePaul's School of Acting. And he's like third build, I would say, in terms of, you got Clemens, and then you got Captain Elliot, but then it's him, right? Yeah. It's a good role. I like, because he's kind of like the second most heroic next to Clemens then, once he acknowledges the fact, oh shit, I know I was supposed to inherit this boat, but I'd rather live.
Yeah. He apologizes to the ship, I think, when he starts hacking into it.
But you know what? I forget how he died, though. That's one that's escaping me.
Wojciech goes down to basically, before the escape, or abandoned ship, rather, goes down into the hold and he starts taking the axe to the hull, and he's trying to break through it.
Yeah,
axe stuck in there. Dracula grabs him and just basically feeds.
Got him. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, but what a great character actor that David Desmalchian is. I thought, sometimes when actors do accents, especially for an entire film, I thought he did such a good job that, like, it was never questioned, like, he is this person. He is this person. I'm not questioning where he's from. I'm like, I'm not thinking it's a guy from the Midwest doing a voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I was really impressed. I looked him up a little bit. After he graduated, he went up to Alaska to be a fisherman. He also worked in the circus. This guy's a character in real life, too.
That's awesome. Good for him.
Very interesting. Yeah, totally. A couple other things that I really did like was the tomb, this like steampunk tomb where they did find the wolf cane that you mentioned earlier.
Right.
Were the way that they unlashed that, I thought that was really badass. I'd never seen this
and it just,
sort of a thing before.
It almost just gave me the idea by seeing that there's a lever on the outside that Dracula probably has a lever on the inside to open it. You know?
Exactly.
He's got to be able to click that and it opens, because there's otherwise, how is he getting in and out of here?
And I was a little confused, because I've definitely affiliated wolves with Dracula before, as seen on the cane, but they make a big deal about it at the top of the film, where initially this one guy is hired to be a ship hand, and then he goes on the boat and he sees the dragon symbol on the tomb, or not the tomb, but the box of
the coffin.
Dirt that Dracula subsists in. Coffin, yeah. I've never affiliated dragons with Dracula before. What's that about?
In lore, Dracula is derived from Dragula, which is dragon, the dragon. And it's also tied to Vlad the Impaler, who was an actual person in the Romania area. He was the closest you'll come to is like a real Dracula. They say that Dracula was based off of this Vlad the Impaler character because he was so just devastating. And then Gary Oldman plays Vlad the Impaler in Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula. So Dracula is where we're getting Dracula from, the dragon.
I love that's authentic then. Yeah. I don't feel like that's ever explicitly been dealt with before, the dragon connection.
I think just a little bit in Francis Ford Coppola's. I think he really I think he just really tried to dive down into, also maybe in the did you happen to see Luke Evans' film Dracula Untold?
I don't think so.
That's also an origin story movie that I think is a little underrated. I think it's pretty fun. It's kind of one of those movies you'll only see like on TNT now. It's like it's like a cable movie, but it's very fun, and they do a good job of giving him, you know, like the character, like connecting him to a story, you know. Instead of just being this creature, he, you know, having an origin story, like why Dracula became who he was in that version, it's because he needed to defend his family, and the only way to fight off the army was to actually take on the powers of the undead. So it was a cool way of
saying.
So now I've just got that in my system where like I could connect that to the character. You know, you just go to like pull what you want and piecemeal your own Dracula together.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to catch that one then. I mean, the last thing I kind of want to talk about was like Anna a little bit, and how I didn't quite understand how everyone else turns upon being bitten.
Yeah,
but he was able to feed off of her for days and days. There's multiple bites on her. Why has she not turned?
So I think there's two things here. I think she was put on this ship to be like the thing I'm going to try to
kiss. This is
the feed, just
snack, yeah.
To feed off of this entire journey until I can get my hands on something else. I also think the blood transfusion was keeping her from turning. I think pulling the poison out, you know, I think that's what they were trying to imply, is that it was what was keeping her from completely turning.
Okay.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, she had so many bites on her, though. I don't. Know how she hadn't turned. That being said, there was a really cool moment at the end climactic battle where Dracula is trying to smother her with his wings. He's just like wrapped her up like a bat, and that was something I hadn't seen before, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that looked really cool.
So you could say you would recommend this to everybody, or is this one of those things only the devout are going to enjoy it?
I think it is for everybody. I think it's the classic monster in the house horror genre. I think it's, if you like, you know, the idea of being trapped within a house or a ship and there's a monster somewhere in there in the shadows, just like I think everybody can enjoy Alien. I think that's what this movie does here. And I think out of Andre Overdahl's body of work, this might be the one that's closest to mass appeal.
That's fair. I could see that. And I think, yeah, like you said, it was just a matter of promotions that it really didn't hit. I do also think they could have cut out the priest character. What do you think? I feel like there could have been more meaningful stuff done with what he was slinging theologically, rhetorically, but he wasn't. He felt like an afterthought. And when I did like the irony in the of him being the one that's the coward and escape and leaving everyone to die on the boat.
Yeah.
And it set up the great moment where we get to see the full expanse of Dracula as the Batman.
Right.
But I don't know if you're going to cut, if you're going to cut a character that takes up time, I feel like it would be him.
Yeah. I think they were following a different set of rules, not just horror, but of, sailing rules. Like, they needed somebody, like, you have to have someone who's going to cook. He is also the cook.
Oh, that's right.
So I think, yes. Yeah, they're like, oh, what else can we do with him? And I completely agree with you. I think he's the devout,
yeah,
the devout religious person who just decides to run instead of condemning. There's a really great Liam Cunningham moment where he's got the crucifix in his hand and he's like, I renounce you. And he's standing up for himself and his beliefs. And I think he even says something along those lines to Clemens, like, tell them I you know, I was basically brave at the end. But
that's fair. You know what? Captain Elliot had some really fun scenes. Most significantly, it's when he thinks that his it's his grandson, right? Toby is wrapped up in the cloth. They're about to it's what?
I think it's his son. And I was like, well, he's pretty old. He had a
I thought he was bringing it back to his daughter because he was going to retire. Maybe. Nice little cottage. I it might have been either way. The moment where they're about to throw him off and Captain Elliot's like, oh, I saw a move.
Yeah.
And then he goes and unwraps it. And then the kid like pops up all vampire Dracula style. You know what I mean? That's a classic homage to.
Yeah. It's like it was that moment where he couldn't say goodbye. And then he ended up causing more harm. Like, he actually exposed his son's body to the sun. And he himself gets burnt. His beard catches on fire. Wow.
That was fun and startling. And, yes. I mean, if this kid is now an immortal and he's tossed down to the bottom of the ocean, that is the worst hell you can possibly imagine, just being conscious at the bottom of the ocean for eternity.
Yeah.
That poor kid.
Aw.
Okay, here's what bothered me, though. That was probably the highlight of Captain Elliot. But then when he's so sad, he's then suddenly willing to shoot Clemens, to then shoot Anna when he's, you know, holding the gun up to him.
Yeah.
So distraught. That seemed out of character.
Yeah, there are a couple moments where I think Captain Elliot has some really tough decisions to make. And I feel like, you know, because of the way he decides, it's ultimately what kind of dooms them. Like, he's the one who's, even when Wojciech's like, we should toss this lady overboard.
Yeah.
Which just sounds terrible. But also back in the day, they were so worried. It was a bad luck to have a woman on a ship. But it was what set things into motion. Dracula was still there. But by keeping her there, I think it was what was also giving Dracula some set of powers. He was only feeding on animals up until then, I think. But yeah,
right.
I think, yeah, he was kind of flip-flopping around as far as what his moral beliefs really were.
Yeah, I struggle with that scene. But there was so much to make up for it. There's this really great moment where he is climbing up the sails to get to Ulgrin, who, when he initially sees Dracula coming for him, he's like, please no! And then Dracula is like, pretty much the only thing we hear him say, right? Taunting,
yeah.
He says,
yeah,
please
no. Yeah, I think it's also that Dracula doesn't speak English yet. You know, I don't know. I mean, he's coming from this area near Russia, and like, he is mimicking, but I think he's also learning. And I don't know. It was a really great moment, though. Too, I liked that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, we love our vampire fare. The production value was amazing. You got Bear McCreary as the one doing the soundtrack for it, the score.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's badass. He did Lord of the Rings. What was that last one? You know, Black Sails, which is probably how he got this one, because that's obviously. And I don't know, have you watched the new Apple TV show based on Isaac Asimov's novel Foundation?
He does the
intro to that, too. I mean,
yeah,
he elevated it. I feel like the direction was out of the park. All of the performances on point, just a little long. That's it.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that's all I got. What you
I
got?
Think that's I'm all not... I got too. I said earlier, I think it is something that everybody could watch. It's just another movie, you know, plop it on your 31 nights of Halloween movies to watch.
Yes. That's a good call. That'd be a perfect one for it.
Yeah.
But of course, beloved listeners, don't forget to subscribe and tell all your horror friends about our phenomenal past podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we don't get to say so myself.
We don't get paid to say we like movies. So there we go.
Damn Skippy. But until then, until the next time, and get excited because we have fun month of horrors coming up here leading up to Halloween. Do your best to stay alive.